Hello and welcome to the Total Football Soccer Show, Richmond's first, only, and therefore best football talk show. I'm Taylor.
And I'm Daryl.
And this week on the show,
we'll discuss the controversial Manchester derby, a discussion that may require 6 minutes of added time.
As if football weren't already absurd enough, we'll bring you a new segment titled Seemingly Fake News.
We'll list our top five football derbies, and we'll try to get through that without violence breaking out in the studio.
Speaking of which, we'll close with the spelling bee. This week, it's English players so that no one can complain about the pronunciation.
So this past Sunday was the Manchester derby between Manchester United and Manchester City at Old Trafford. Manchester United ran out 4-3 winners, and there was all kinds of stuff happening at the end of that game.
Yeah, it was definitely one of the more dramatic derbies I've seen. You know, you don't expect any scoreline like 4-3. You know, lately they've been 1-0, 2-0, and stuff like that. So it was definitely surprising to see them go back and forth. United would score, City would score, and then it went all the way up to the 90th minute. When Craig Bellamy, Manchester City's somewhat controversial forward, scored his second goal of the match, the third goal for City, tying it 3-3. People thought it would end there, and then Michael Owen, Manchester United's substituted forward, came in and scored in the 96th minute, which was fairly controversial.
Yeah, so a lot of people not so familiar with football will be thinking, isn't football 90 minutes long? How did Michael Owen score in the 96th minute? You want to explain that, Tyler?
Yeah, well, basically what happens is the referee wears two watches. He wears, you know, one, you know, just keeping track of normal time, 0 to 90 minutes, and then he has a second one kind of to keep track of injury time, stoppages of play, you know, if a player gets injured, substitutions, that kind of stuff. And then at the end of the match, he makes up the difference, so they'll have minutes added on or time added on. In this situation, there were 4 minutes added on, which means a minimum of four, but it can go all the way to 4:59. So they said 4 minutes, then there was some other action, there were substitutions, Manchester City scored, so conceivably
there was,
went
yeah,
to
there was
6 minutes.
Time added on for the goal celebration and for a substitution.
Right, yeah, Michael Carrick subbed in. So conceivably, there wasn't too much time added on, although I read one report that said that Michael Owen scored 1 second after the time the referee should have blown the whistle.
Yeah, I saw that too. That was on BBC Match of the Day. They sort of added it up.
Yeah. To me, that's a bit extreme. I mean, I'm obviously saying this as a Manchester United fan, but...
Yeah, it's hard for you to be neutral, I would imagine.
It's not even hard. I think it's impossible. But I just say that, you know, I watched it, and then I watched it again on the replay. I added up the time. To me, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility that the referee, you know, called it as safely as he could, as best as he could. Manchester City fans would probably disagree.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I don't really care in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoyed that game as a neutral. It was a great game, back and forth. And icing on the cake for me was to see a last-minute equaliser followed by an even later winner. But what do you think of the fact that Manchester United get more time added on than any other team in the Premier League? Manchester United at Old Trafford, specifically.
As far as the time goes, I mean, again, I'm coming at from it as a United perspective, but... You know, I guess it goes both ways. I'm sure I would be upset if I thought that there was too much time added on, but I don't think the referee did it maliciously. I don't think he did it with any kind of intent. I just think that, you know, maybe 1 second is a bit too much for him to be criticized for. You know, United are consistently one of the top teams in England, if not the top team. So smaller clubs are going to do what they can to, you know, eke out a point, eke out a win against them. So they're going to slow down tactics. They're going to try to kill for time. They're going to fake injury, that kind of stuff. And so I think that a lot of times that's why you see the added on time is because, you know, refs see that and they're going to stop the clock and they're going to wait for the player to get up and then they're going to continue. But that's just me as a United fan. So I guess I'm wondering, where do you come down on this one, Daryl?
I think that there's a bit of paranoia there. I think if there was a big conspiracy to give Manchester United an extra minute of football in every game, it's kind of a pointless. It's a pointless conspiracy.
The second controversial issue from this game, pretty predictably, involves Craig Bellamy. After United scored, a Manchester United fan ran onto the pitch and was tackled by some security personnel. Bellamy, I guess, decided it was his job to go over and tell the fan that he was in the wrong. So he kind of jogged over, had a word with the fan, and then kind of slapped him in the face. Which was, I guess, controversial to some, to others, you know, maybe not that big of a deal.
Well, you can't condone pitch invasions, right? Mm-hmm. Which is basically what the fan running on is.
Yeah.
But it's a bit like the Emmanuel Adebayor thing last week, where you can't condone what the fans did, but the thing that the player did was just stupid as well. You don't need to slap a guy who's already been held back by security. It's not a fair fight, for one thing.
Yeah, definitely not. And I love that Mark Hughes, the manager of Manchester City, came out today and said that, you know, Bellamy was acting in self-defense because this fan was threatening his well-being. And it's like, he's 20 yards away being subdued. I don't think it's that big of a threat.
Yeah.
But, I guess I understand Bellamy getting caught up in the heat of the moment, getting frustrated. But, you know, he does have the history. He was...
Craig Bellamy.
Yeah, he's been mentioned before on this show for being a bit notorious. So, you know, I guess I shouldn't be that surprised by it.
The other controversial figure in that game, apart from Craig Bellamy, was Carlos Tevez.
Yes.
Who was with Manchester United until the end of last season and is now with Manchester City.
Basically, Manchester United went out of their way to not sign him until the end of the season, at which point they'd already lost Cristiano Ronaldo. They kind of made a last-minute offer to Tevez. He was... fairly upset by the fact that they hadn't, you know, gotten to him sooner. He rejected it and ended up signing for Manchester City. So basically, every time he touched the ball throughout the game, he was booed by the United fans. And every time he lost the ball, they cheered dramatically.
Well, my question is, what's happened to him? Because he was so good for Manchester United. And this season, he's looked kind of so-so.
Yeah, he was a fan favorite at United because of all the effort. He ran. He was, you know, even when there are players like Dimitar Berbatov, who are known to be kind of lazy or look kind of lazy, Tevez was always running as hard as he could. And, you know, fans see that. They love that. And there's some speculation that that's basically his MO at this point, that he's going to run his tail off, but, you know, he might not score you the goals that you need to be scored.
So it's almost like he's listened too much to the hype about his work rate, and that's all he's focusing on.
Mm-hmm.
That's really strange, because he's a very, very talented player.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this as a non-talented, hard-working player myself. The hard-working players are the guys who are making up for having no talent.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't need to be doing it to that extent, because when he does get the ball, he's not at 100% if he's just been chasing aimlessly around.
Yeah, well, I have a hard time feeling sorry for him.
No sympathy?
After Manchester City put up a billboard when he switched from United to City that said, "Welcome to Manchester."
Well, that's to be fair, that wasn't Tevez who decided to put that up.
Was that his image on the poster? Well, then it was Tevez, and that's all I have to say about that.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Daryl
and Taylor
on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3, radio for the rest of us.
Daryl and I will be introducing a new segment this week entitled Seemingly Fake News. We scour the internet to bring you stories that sound fictional but are actually factual. All right, so Daryl, what you got?
Okay, my first story comes from Russia,
mm-hmm.
where in a game between Spartak Moscow and Saturn Moscow, a fan scored a penalty for Spartak.
Yeah. How exactly did that happen?
Well, it didn't officially count.
Yeah. I figured. Thank you.
but it with the score at 1-0 to Saturn, Spartak win a penalty. Spartak's Brazilian midfielder, Alex, is sort of preparing to take it. When this kind of, what's a nice way of putting it, rotund Spartak fan runs in at a fair pace, approaches the ball, swings at it with his left foot.
Left foot. See, that was the part that got me.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And puts it in the bottom corner past the Saturn keeper.
Mm-hmm.
And then keeps running, which is the best thing. He doesn't stop. He keeps running and celebrates as if he scored, which he has.
Yeah. It was the best part about it was, you know, we just talked about the Manchester United game where the fan was tackled almost upon, like, as soon as he got on the field, he was just, like, rugby tackled.
Yeah.
Not only does this guy, is he allowed to run around the field, but he has a friend who apparently wants to celebrate with him, and they just kind of jog around the field at a fairly leisurely pace.
Is the guy a skinny guy? Because every fat man has a skinny friend.
Obviously.
Who follows him on and sort of runs off celebrating with him like a teammate after he's scored. That's probably the best thing about it.
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, you got to celebrate with a friend. Well, mine will keep with the theme of Eastern European craziness. Comes to you from the world of fake transfers. This past weekend, Levski Sofia, who are a team based in Bulgaria, were prepared to sell four of their better players to a Russian team. So the players leave the club, fly to Russia, and once they get there, they don't really know what's happening, but for whatever reason, there are no papers to be signed, there's no transfers to be put in.
Does anyone even meet them?
I honestly don't know, but I really like the idea of them just sitting in a frigid airport, like in the middle of Siberia or something. So then they fly back, and they miss their game against CSKA Sofia, who were at the time at the top of the table in the Bulgarian league. And it's kind of led to some suspicion that perhaps there was some tomfoolery afoot, and that it may have been arranged that these four players would miss this fairly important game.
So you think it was CSKA who set up the fake transfer to get them out of the country while the game was happening.
Or just a fairly elaborate Ashton Kutcher prank.
Well, that's how you get Twitter followers.
Yes.
By messing with Bulgarian football.
That seems like it should be the most important lesson to take away from this week's podcast, that if you want to increase Twitter followers, you're probably going to have to trick one or two Bulgarians. For now, that's our fake news of the week. If you encountered any other strange or hilarious or strange and hilarious bits of news, feel free to send it to us at soccer@wrar.org.
And remember, it has to sound fake.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Taylor
and Daryl
here on WRAR 97.3, radio for the rest of us.
So, as you know by now, each week on the show, Tyler and myself do a top five. This week, in honour of the Manchester Derby, we're going to do our top five most interesting derbies or rivalries in world football. Before we get started even, because there are so many.
Yeah.
So, inevitably, a few are going to be left off the list here.
Yeah. And it's important to note, I think, that we're definitely not trying to, you know, glorify the fan violence and stuff like that. I mean, that's going to be a part of most derbies, but it's certainly not what we're going for. What we're going for is kind of the history behind it and the interesting points about that rivalry.
Yeah, I get the hooliganism is always what gets talked up, as if that's the interesting thing.
Right.
But if that's the interesting thing, then...
And what's the point of football?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. To me, the really interesting stuff is the football games, because when you have a football match that's heightened with extra passion on the field, it lifts the whole game.
Definitely.
And then there's the whole social, political, historical context.
Yeah, I'm going to sound like a big nerd, but when we were doing this, I got really excited because I'm a social major and an anthro major. And so it was definitely exciting for me to go through and kind of look at the history of it.
See, I only think you're a nerd because you abbreviated social and anthro.
Yeah, well, you're the one with glasses on, my friend. And on that note, we'll go into our list here. My number five is the Old Firm Derby, that's Celtic and Rangers. It's a pretty obvious pick, I know, but it's definitely a good way for me to start it off. Both the clubs are based in Glasgow, which is in Scotland, obviously. But it's not so much about the geographic proximity as it is every other factor. Starting with the results, the Scottish Premier League has been around for 11 years, and Rangers and Celtic have finished 1-2 in whatever form for 11 years.
Yeah, and it goes back even further than that. I mean, Scottish football is obviously older than 11 years.
Yeah.
And there have been teams that have broken that top two, like Aberdeen for a while. But for the majority of Scottish football's long, long history, it's been Rangers and Celtic.
Yeah, and then you do have the situations off the field that we've discussed. Basically, the team split in very important ways. They split along religious lines. Celtic are predominantly Catholic supported, and Rangers are predominantly Protestant. And then there's the political lines, generally relating to Northern Ireland and the situation there, so that Rangers supporters are generally seen as loyalists or British loyalists, and then Celtic supporters are seen more as Republican supporters, that kind of thing, which is why it's kind of interesting that if you look at the Old Firm Derby, you don't usually see a lot of Scottish flags. You'll either see the Irish tricolour in supporting Irish Republicanism or the Union flag. But the main point here is that they really hate each other for a number of reasons, and they don't exactly get along come Derby Day.
True. And everything else aside, those games are fantastic up in Scotland. So my number five is the Rome Derby. I believe it's called Derby della Capitale.
Oh, maybe. So fancy. Look at you. European, you.
When I was a young kid, this was sort of the first non-English, non-Scottish derby that I became aware of because English footballer Paul Gascoigne, after the 1990 World Cup, or a year after that, was transferred to Lazio. So he scored a late equaliser in a Rome Derby. And it was just huge news in England and obviously in Italy. And that's when I first became aware of how important derbies like that were.
Yeah. The other thing that was intriguing to me when I first heard about this derby was that, you know, generally Roma supporters are left wing, Lazio supporters are right wing. And I
didn't know that.
Yeah, and I've been a Roma supporter for a really, really long time. One of the main reasons was because one of my first associations with Lazio was Paolo Di Canio doing the fascist salute.
I believe we mentioned that before.
Yeah, that kind of turned me off of Lazio and made me a bigger Roma supporter.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. My number four is, it's kind of confusing because it's not quite a derby, but it's still definitely a rivalry. It would be Red Star Belgrade and Dinamo Zagreb.
Okay, good luck explaining the political history.
Yeah,
I'm going to sit back and let you tread through this carefully.
Appreciate it. Well, basically, when Yugoslavia was unified, these were the two top teams in the country. However, when communism fell in the early 90s, the nation kind of began to fracture into different groups. One group, which was led by predominantly Croatian delegates, wanted kind of a loose confederation of nations. One group, led by Serbians, wanted a strong kind of communist state. So amidst this backdrop, Red Star, who are Serbian, and Dinamo Zagreb, who are Croatian, met
in the Yugoslavian League, right?
Right. And before the match could even begin, there's just rioting across the stadium between the two groups of fans. It spread onto the field, and even the players got involved. The enduring image is one of the Zagreb players drop-kicking a police officer who was assaulting a Croatian. And some would argue that basically that was the beginning of the Croatian War of Independence. So you can see, you know, how important these matches are to some fans, and also how the sport can, you know, kind of transcend the game and even go into politics.
Wow. I have nothing to add to that. It was very thorough.
Thank you. I do what I can. I do what I can.
Okay, my number four is the Superclásico,
mm-hmm.
Which is the big game in Argentina between Boca Juniors and River Plate.
Yeah, coming off of my pick about Red Star and Zagreb, this definitely seemed like a good one to go to, because it's contrary to what you might think. It's actually not known for really any instances of fan violence. It's more so about the sport.
It's actually, in a weird way, kind of friendly. I've seen a YouTube video of a River fan and a Boca fan before the game having a dance-off.
Nice.
Which is excellent. But so the context of it is that obviously Boca and River are the two biggest, most successful teams in Argentina. And they're also both based in the city of Buenos Aires.
Right.
Sort of. See, Boca are based sort of downtown in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the 20s, River Plate moved out to the suburbs.
Oh, of course.
Right? Uh-huh. So it's a very American-style story. It's sort of divided along class lines. Mm-hmm. So now Boca are seen as the working-class team, and River are seen as the middle-class team.
Yeah, I guess it's important to note here that when we say these kind of things, we're kind of talking in generality. So it's not like all the poor people in Argentina are supporting one team and all the rich people are supporting another. They, you know, they tend to blur, but predominantly yeah, these are
yeah,
the groups
it's predominantly,
that follow them.
And it's the perception.
Right, yeah. Gotcha. Well, we're going to go back across the Atlantic Ocean to Africa, because my number three is Al Ahly and Zamalek, both clubs of Egypt. And to call it a rivalry is a bit of an understatement, because basically their hatred of each other goes back 100 years. Football was kind of imported by the British, and so in 1907, Al Ahly was formed, and it was kind of the reaction to the British influence. Al Ahly actually means the national, and they are supported by the devout, the poor, and the proud, basically.
Okay.
Kind of the lower classes, I guess you could say. And in contrast, Zamalek were seen as, you know, the team of the foreigner, the team of, like, the kind of bougie team, I guess you could say. They were supported by the intellectuals and the artists who kind of resisted the strong nationalism. And so these divisions remain today. When they do play each other, they have to play on neutral ground. They can't play in their own stadiums. The match is attended by over 100,000 people every time, and they have to fly in officials to referee the game to make sure it's impartial and to avoid any kind of controversy.
Okay, so my number three.
Mm-hmm.
All right, my number four was the Superclásico.
Mm-hmm.
My number three is the Honda Superclásico.
Ooh.
So which country would have a sponsored derby?
I'm going to guess America.
America, indeed, yeah. This is probably, in my opinion, the only proper derby in Major League Soccer.
Do you mean that DC United and the Red Bulls aren't a proper rivalry?
Well, yeah, well, this is it, right? The derby I'm referring to is Los Angeles Galaxy versus Chivas USA.
Right.
Both based in the city of Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
or just outside it in Carson, but right. still both based in the same city. So it's the only two teams in Major League Soccer that are in the same city. All the others, like you said, DC, New York,
mm-hmm. you're right.
That's not a derby because it's so far away.
And
Chicago,
then
Columbus, that's not a derby because it's so far away.
Well, 400 miles, that's kind of close yeah. enough, right? I think the other thing about the Honda Superclásico that's interesting is that
I want to stop saying Honda now.
Okay, fair enough. In the derby that we're talking about, I think the other interesting thing is that it kind of breaks down along social lines and class lines.
Yeah, definitely cultural lines, because Chivas USA is officially linked with the Mexican team Chivas de Guadalajara.
Right.
That team has a lot of Mexican support,
mm-hmm.
whether that's Mexican immigrants or Mexican Americans,
mm-hmm.
or Americans with Mexican heritage or whatever. Right. They tend to support that team, and then
that was Daryl craftily trying to cover all bases there and not be politically incorrect. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
And then you've got Los Angeles Galaxy, which you would assume has less Mexican support.
Yeah.
So far, the rivalry has been like intense, but not too much violence or nothing bad has happened,
mm-hmm.
but it's been kind of exciting to watch. That's one of the MLS games that when I see that game is going to be on TV,
mm-hmm.
I'll watch that.
Well, my number two is a bit surprising to be on the list again, but it's Galatasaray and Fenerbahce.
Okay.
And it makes a list for two reasons. They're both Turkish clubs, but I think that they have the distinction of being the only derby or rivalry where the teams are from the same city, which is Istanbul, but on different continents. Galatasaray are based in Europe, on the European side of Istanbul, and Fenerbahce are on the Asian side of Istanbul.
Okay.
But the second reason for this being on my list is that I've actually attended this match. Unfortunately, it was at Fenerbahce Stadium.
Why unfortunately?
Well, Fener's home ground is called the Şükrü Saracoğlu Stadium, and it seats about 56,000. And of those, they don't let in a whole lot of Galatasaray fans. So okay. I went as a Galatasaray supporter, surrounded by very angry, very loud Fener fans who...
So you were in with the Fenerbahçe fans, or you were in a small section
no.
of Galatasaray
fans?
Oh,
no, I was penned off. I was penned off.
Okay.
Very much penned off. And that didn't stop the stadium from shaking, because the Fener fans are so well-versed in Derby Day tradition that when they start getting into it, you get a little intimidated. And, you know, that kind of passion witnessed firsthand, it definitely is going to make this rivalry find its way out of my list.
So my number two is moving away from club rivalries and into international rivalries, and I've chosen Brazil versus Argentina. Obviously, there are a lot of international rivalries like England, Scotland, USA, Mexico, but those are rivalries because of things that have happened politically or culturally with those nations.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, as I understand it, Brazil versus Argentina is a rivalry just based on football and based on the quality of the football.
How much of that do you think has to do with the fact that, like, you have Pele, who's one of the best players in the world, and Maradona, you know, they come from those countries? Do you think that plays into it a little bit?
Well, I think actually that's more a result of it, because the rivalry goes back, like, to the 30s,
right.
I think, maybe further. And yeah, so the big thing to come out of it is this argument over who's the best player of all time. Is it Diego Maradona? Is it Pele? And brilliantly, the two people who seem most obsessed with that argument are the players themselves,
yeah.
who just won't let it go.
Yeah, though they don't seem like they will.
Yeah, so I'm hoping as well Argentina make the World Cup in 2010, just in case we get to see that game.
Well, keep hoping. my number one is a bit of a cop-out, but there's no surprise. It's Manchester United and Liverpool.
Okay.
And it's, as with Celtic and Rangers, it's interesting in a variety of different ways. Firstly, it's really interesting to me that Manchester and Liverpool are 30 miles apart. And not only that, but they each have a rival in their own city. Manchester obviously has Manchester City. Liverpool has Everton. And yet, if you asked fans of either side who their biggest rival was, they'd point to each other.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, obviously. And so...
Can you tell us why that is?
Well, basically, at least from my understanding, it goes back to the fact that they're always near the top. And, you know, right now they both are sitting on 18 English championships. So it's kind of the race to see who can win number 19.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're just historically two of the biggest teams in the country. And so there's always going to be that heated rivalry.
I like this rivalry because, again, it's not really about class or anything like that. It's just about success. It's about who's got the most trophies. And they're always arguing about who's the more successful team, who's the bigger team. And it brings up some great, great games.
Yeah, and I think kind of going off that, one point is that we already spoke about Carlos Tevez and how I have no love for him. One thing I definitely found interesting was that when his loan had expired, when he was kind of free to sign with whomever he wanted, he was linked with Liverpool. And he said, oh, there's no way I would ever do that to the United fans. I would never sign for Liverpool. And then he went and signed for Manchester City, which kind of indicates where the rivalry really is, that this team in our own city he would sign for, but not the team 30 miles away.
Absolutely. Okay, so that leaves me with my number one.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is El Clasico. Barcelona, or Barcelona, and Real Madrid. There's so much here. I mean, just like in Scotland, these are the big two teams in Spain. Arguably, the biggest two teams in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm thinking in terms of, especially this summer, we saw the big players from big teams, like Milan and Manchester United, were drawn to Real Madrid and Barcelona.
Right.
So I think I've established these are big teams.
Right.
But obviously there's also the social and political implications here as well.
Mm.
So for those who don't know, Barcelona is the capital of Catalonia, which many Catalans consider themselves sort of almost a separate nation.
Kind of like Catalan first, Spanish second, that kind of thing?
Exactly, okay. Yeah, exactly like that. Whereas Real Madrid is the team of...
Franco?
Well, there is that, which I think it's a little harsh to always associate them with Franco.
The
I know you like
Franco.
To do it because they took Cristiano Ronaldo, but it is... It's
more than that, but yeah, that helps.
It's the team of nationalism in Spain, right? So there's obviously a very obvious clash between that separatist idea of the Catalan people and that sort of nationalist idea that's based in Madrid, Spanish capital. And then because the Catalan people don't have a nation, the football club, Barcelona, becomes a way for them to express their nationalism.
Gotcha.
Hence the Barcelona club motto, which I'm not sure what the actual Catalan words are, but I know it means more than a club. Is it Mesqui un club or something like that?
Sure. That sounds like it could be. And then obviously you have, you know, the on-field results. They're always going to compete and they're always going to put forth some really attractive football, you know. Obviously, I have my bias against Real Madrid, but, you know, you watch them play, it is Yoga Bonito. It is a beautiful game. So for that, I'll definitely agree with you that they deserve top spot.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you, especially as it was my number one.
There you go.
So that was our top five most interesting derbies in world football. I'm sure there are many, many, many that we've missed off. But yep. If you've got any that you think should have been on the list, please email them to soccer@wrir.org. You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Daryl
and Taylor
on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3, radio for the rest of us.
Okay, so with top five now done, we move on to this week's spelling bee. Right now, Daryl and I are tied 2-2 through 5 weeks, which is fairly abysmal. So we're hoping to spell English players and get back on track.
Okay. I'm not only going to give you an English player, I'm going to give you a Wolves player.
All right.
Okay, I want you to spell Michael Mancian.
Oh, okay. M-I-C-H-A-E-L.
Well done.
M-A-N-C-I-E-N-N-E.
Correct.
Whew! All right. All right, back on track for me. let's do it. All right. I was ready for Silva and Evans Blake or whatever. That's what I was.
Would you have got that?
Probably not. So
okay, let's do that instead.
No, I'm good. I'm good now. All right. So, Daryl, I would like for you to spell Clark Carlisle of Burnley.
Okay. I'm going to go surname first.
Mm-hmm.
Surname Carlisle is C-A-R-L-I-S-L-E.
Mm-hmm.
Clark is C-L-A-R-K-E.
That is correct.
Yes.
Well done. All right. Back on track. 3-6. And I will take 50%. So well done, Daryl. And well
and
done,
well done
me.
Taylor.
Thank you. Appreciate that. So that about wraps it up for us here at the Total Football Soccer Show. But just a reminder that if you've got any thoughts, comments, questions, concerns, anything like that, then feel free to email them to us at soccer@wrir.org.
And as usual, we'll close with a quote. Sticking with the theme of international rivalries, this is Eric Winalda, former USA striker, when asked about the USA versus Mexico rivalry. He said, "Nowhere is it written that I have to say I like them. That's just the way it is."